So one of the critical things as we talk about, you know, really moving the graduation rate of our country up, we just cannot really deal with the most prepared students. We really have to reach back to the blue-collar workers and the masses and really propel that population into one receiving a post-secondary degree. Because virtually what it really comes down to, when it comes down to people, nationally, only 7 out of 20 individuals get their degree in 4 years. And when you look at our minority-serving institutions, or HBCUs and specifically, it's only 3 out of 20, 4 years receiving their degree. So there's a question about why, what happens. But more importantly, we're here to discuss how can we really affect change. Now, when you look internationally, the United States ranks 12th of developing countries when you look at 25 to 34-year-olds with a associate's degree or better. Ranked 12th. Now, as we talk about our economy, we talk about the unemployment rate, as our speaker said earlier, without the education, you cannot have the job. The 15 million plus unemployed individuals in our society now have to be retooled. Retooled for what the existing demand is for jobs. This is just an indication of the type of trouble that we're in, 12th nationally. So what we're going to transition to now is to Josh Barron to tell you about the Open Academic Analytics Initiative, an initiative to really drive graduation rates by doing early intervention with individuals taking courses and really making a difference in terms of the persistent rate, the course completion rate, the quality of course completion, as well as graduation rate. Josh.
Thanks, Ramon. So technology will solve all those big problems, right? Probably not, but at least I think there's a role for technology, and particularly learner analytics, in addressing some of these really crisis-level retention rates. I mean, even as we worked on putting our proposal together for the NGLC funding that we received, I'll talk more about that in a minute, for someone who's spent their whole career in higher education, I was shocked by some of these numbers, particularly among some of the minority institutions we're working with. So it really is a national crisis. So I'm going to give you a brief overview of our whole Open Academic Analytics Initiative, do that hopefully in just a few minutes, just give you the kind of big picture. I want to spend kind of the meat of the presentation, or at least a good chunk on it, on one of the intervention strategies that we're deploying in our project called the Online Academic Support Environment, or internally we call OASIS. Talk a little bit about the design frame for that. I'll hopefully demonstrate it if the technology behaves itself. And then if we have time, I want to end by talking a little bit more about the predictive model that we've built and some of the research we're doing around portability of these models, moving predictive model built on historical data from one type of institution to another, which we see as a really critical issue in terms of scaling up learner analytics. We may not have time to get into all of those, but at least I wanted to put the slides in there. You can always take a look at those and follow up after the session. And I'll end by talking about some of the next things we were looking to do in our consortium, and we'd love to have more people join us so there would be opportunities to collaborate with each other. So a little bit here on our grant in general. OAI is, you know, working in the field of learner academic analytics. If you're, I assume people come to this session and today have some general working knowledge of that. If not, the seven things you need to know about first generation learner analytics that came out of ELI recently, I think, is a great resource. I also thought it was aptly named and titled because this is very much first generation stuff from my experience. I think this is still pretty emerging, kind of cutting edge technology. So there's lots more questions probably out there than there are answers. So in our particular project, we're focused on two primary data sources that we're leveraging. One's coming from our student information system. This is things like student demographic data, aptitude data, SAT scores, GPA, that kind of data. And the other source is our learning management system. And so here we're looking at things like events log data in the system, all the things students are clicking on, content they're reading, assignments they're submitting, and so forth, as well as gradebook data. And so I'll talk again a little bit more later on about the details of this, but those are the data sources that we're mining and building a predictive model on, with the ultimate goal of creating an open source early alert system. And that's, I think, another unique aspect of what we're doing, and I guess we'll talk about here in more detail, but really creating an open source opportunity for people to adopt free of licensing charges an early alert system that will be able to predict which students at the course level are at risk not to complete that course, do that as early as possible, hopefully in the first few weeks of that course, and then deploy an intervention. Obviously, just knowing that a student may be at risk to not succeed is interesting information, but unless we actually do something about it, get that student to be successful, we're obviously not leveraging the technology very well. So a little visual diagram here of kind of at a high level how this is working. We're taking the static data from the student information system. Again, SAT scores, GPA, high school ranking, these things don't change generally, so this is static data that gets brought in. And then on a more real-time basis, we're bringing in the event data and gradebook data from, in this case, Sakai. So we're, as the course is rolling out, almost, on a week-to-week basis, that data is becoming available and fed into our predictive model, which has been built on historical data, so same data that's up here. And then a scoring process happens, so we can actually score each individual student and predict, based on the historical data and patterns in that data, which students might be at risk to not complete their course, and then deploy our intervention. And we actually have two interventions we're studying, but the one I'll focus on is the online academic support environment. There's obviously some evidence of early success with this technology and approach. I think one of the one that's most well known is Purdue University's Course Signals Project and the work of Dr. John Campbell, who I think is here in this session, but he's here at the conference. It's now a SunGuard product that integrates with at least Blackboard, maybe other LMSs. And they've certainly been able to show from some fairly large sample size studies that they've been able to increase the number of letter A and B letter grades in courses that are using Course Signals, decrease the number of CDs and Fs, and also increase persistent rates from one semester to another. We also have some early evidence that intervention strategies that use support groups have a similar positive effect on GPA and persistence. And again, the online academic support environment utilizes these kind of support groups, so that's relevant to our work and study as well. So OAI is building on this prior success, and we're doing that under two major initiatives. One, again, is creating this open ecosystem for analytics. And the ecosystem contains a number of components. One is the CAI, Collaboration Learning Environment. That's an open source learning management system, if you're not familiar with it. And we're building an API for Sakai that will securely capture the event log data and gradebook data that I've mentioned, pull that data out, and bring it into Pentaho, which is an open source business intelligence suite of tools. So it has data mining, analytics, data integration, and reporting capabilities. The API will also be able to feed this data into commercial products like Course Signals or SPSS. We're kind of agnostic to whatever platform people are using. Our goal is to try to scale this as quickly and as large as possible, so we want to make it work with as many systems that are out there. And probably one of the more unique aspects of the ecosystem is that we're actually going to release the predictive model that we've built under an open source license using a standardized markup language called PMML. That will allow anybody to take the predictive model, import it into whatever analytics software they prefer to use, enhance the model, add to it, and then deploy it at your institution without a licensing thing. The other major, yes? It's a standard by the Data Mining Group, which is an international standards body in the area of analytics, not just learner analytics, but yeah. I would say, I would call it probably, be more accurate, I would say an emerging standard. Not every analytics software package both imports and exports with PMML, but at least from what I've seen in the next year or so, it looks like most of them. SPSS does, Pentaho does. Good question. Second major initiative is researching these intervention strategies and what's most effective, because we really feel that in terms of critical scaling factors, things like portability, how can we take a model that's built on data from, let's say, Marist College, where I'm from, which is a mid-sized liberal arts institution, and have that model actually then deployed at University of Michigan or some other institution that's quite different. If we don't figure out how to do that, scaling this kind of stuff up becomes very, very difficult because we have to do one-offs at every institution. We also want to know what intervention strategies are most effective. And again, that's where this online academic support environment comes in. We're very interested in how we can leverage online communities to increase student completion rates and retention rates once they've been identified, obviously, as being at risk. As Ramon said, I'll emphasize, please ask questions as we go through this because I'd rather answer your questions, have this be interactive and hit every slide. So some of the outcomes, we will be releasing what we're now kind of calling the Sakai Academic Alert System, which includes the API and the predictive model at the end of our project and our open source license will be part of the Sakai core release. We are currently piloting this at community colleges and HBCUs, Cerritos College, partner here in the room, College of the Redwoods, our two community colleges in California we're working with. We're also piloting it at Savannah State University, and North Carolina A&T will be coming on in the fall. And of course, we'll be releasing our research findings. We have a paper that will be published at the end of April that talks about some of our early initial research around the portability issue. We'll be publishing more research as it comes available, including the impact that the use of online communities has on things like persistent rates, content mastery, and course completion. So all of this is thanks to NGLC, the Next Generation Learning Challenges Grant. We are a wave one recipient of funding, about $250,000. This is being funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates and Hewlett Foundations. Originally, it was a 15-month period, but we have so much to do that we've gotten an extension through January 2013. For those of you with NGLC grants, maybe you got that joke. So how many people have deployed learning management system-based analytics in your institution today? I'm really just curious to see if you don't count. How many people are thinking about doing it in the next couple of years? Good larger group. This is such a rapidly moving field. It's interesting to see how quickly people are starting to gravitate towards this. Okay, so let me talk here a little bit about the online academic support environment, which again is one of the core intervention strategies that we're deploying. I'll give you, just so you have something in your head as I talk here a little bit, and again I'll do a quick demo here in a minute, give you a picture of what it looks like. We're using a project site capability of Sakai to build our online academic support environment. If you're familiar with Sakai, you know that we have course sites which support structured, formal teaching and learning activities, online courses, face-to-face courses, and so forth. But Sakai also has project sites which are built specifically to support ad hoc collaboration. Faculty committees, student clubs, they have different roles, they have different tool sets, some overlap but some differences. And so we're leveraging that capability to create this online support environment for students. We started out by creating a design framework. Now, there's kind of a few reasons for this. First, we're doing a research study, so we wanted to standardize what this OASIS environment looked like and how it worked across our pilots. But we also wanted to start to communicate out to those interested in this what kind of guiding principles you might want to follow when you're putting an environment like this together. We're going to release this as part of our grant on our Creative Commons license. It's mostly typed up at this point, so if anybody wants it, I'd be happy to get it out to people now. And it's loosely based on online course design, if you're familiar with some of the work there. And so we have kind of three major design frames that we present to the folks putting these together. One around learner-content interactions, one on learner-facilitator interactions, and one around learner-mentor interactions, and I'll show more examples to talk about that in a minute. And one of the other reasons for creating kind of these guiding principles, but not really specifying at a very detailed level what this needs to look like, is that each institution needs to be able to localize this to your own needs. So at Marist, we have an academic learning center, we have tutors, maybe at Cerritos, they have a different type of services, different types of resources to tap into. So although the design needs to be similar, it needs to be localized to meet each individual needs. And we're also leveraging open educational resources as much as possible to reduce the cost of deploying this kind of environment. So on the first design frame here, we have kind of three major components. We're recommending people deploy self-assessments. These are often used in learning support centers at institutions, so ways for students to self-assess their study skills, learning inventory, kind of skill inventory, surveys, subject matter, where are their weaknesses and strengths in core subjects is math and writing and so forth. So these are very helpful so students can take these on their own and then self-identify where they need to spend time. The surveys?
The self-assessment.
Yes, yes. And in fact, the whole OASIS is really independent of any one course. So although you could build one for every course or every subject matter, at least in our pilots, it's an OASIS for any student who's kind of been identified as being at risk and needs some extra help. Content, OER content for remediation. So things like Khan Academy. Open educational resources. Sorry, should have had that acronym up there. So these are Creative Commons licensed materials that are freely available for anybody to distribute and make, remix and change around. One of the challenges there is information overload. There's so much great stuff out there often that you take a student who's already struggling, you say, here is 5,000 things you can use to improve algebra. Well, that may not actually be the best thing for them. So trying to present information in a way that's not so overloading. So I'll go into more detail at the end, but that's where this predictive model comes in. So basically, we've taken the last three semesters worth of data from Marist College in terms of how our students use our learning management system, as well as their demographic and aptitude data, and done a lot of analytical work to look for patterns in that data and correlate those patterns to student success. So a student who does certain things in the LMS, has certain GPAs, certain high school rankings, might be predicted to be not succeeding in a certain course.
Make that prediction
when? We will find out in about 6 months. But Purdue University has, and that's why we've been funded to continue this research, so Purdue's Course Signals has been able to increase letter scores among these students using the same exact approach of building a predictive model off these data sets and then being able to predict which students are going to not succeed in their courses. They've been able to do that at about 75% accuracy within the first 2 weeks of a course. And this is, I'm not the analytics person, so exactly all the analytics, we have a paper we're publishing on that we could share with people. Yeah, I'll show some examples of basic stuff there, but that's actually an area we really would like to do a lot more work in. Not only is social media a great tool for actually building community and supporting students, the data associated with that we think would be really great data to mine and bring into our analytics model. Good question. Yes. You mean the predictive model? It doesn't, and it's an interesting debate because we have a computer science mathematician who is our analytics person, and we have a social scientist who's our research person, and they debate heavily whether or not we should look at things through the lens of social science and learning sciences and say, well, teaching strategy should have a big impact on student outcomes. Our mathematician says, I don't really care about the social science theories, I just want to see what the data tells us. So right now, I'm a social science person, so I have an engineering background, so I kind of sit in between the two guys. But so I think that right now, we're in terms of the grant, the project, focused on the analytics part, but I think there is also, we have to couple that with the learning sciences piece. So the last major kind of area under this frame is resources to help students improve study skills. So test-taking skills, time management skills, stress reduction. First-generation student in college, you just freaking out, you're not doing so well, how do you deal with that stress, those types of things. So let me now flip over to our demo version of OASIS here. I'm sure I didn't get signed out here. So this is our instance of Sakai at Marist College. And whoops. We've built, in a sense, a prototype OASIS environment here that the other sites are then modeling theirs off of. So you can see we've done some basic things. This is not super sophisticated technology stuff, highlighting certain programs for the students. In this case, an online proofreading service that they may not be aware of, they can take advantage of. A little welcome message there for them to sign in. I'll show you some of the content here. So we're using the lessons tool in Sakai. So they might say, okay, I need some help with math. We're going to present them with a math tutoring video. Again, this isn't the real stuff that's being used right now. It's more just the demo. So we've embedded a Khan Academy video in here. It's not too well. Just imagine Khan talking there. So what we're trying to do is give them an example and then bring them deeper in to look for more content that specifically meets their needs. Again, trying to deal with that information overload. But again, all this content is freely available out there as OER open education materials. We're also trying to leverage open textbooks. So this is a Flat World Knowledge textbook. If you're not familiar with Flat World Knowledge, they are a kind of traditional publisher, textbook publisher, but they publish all of their textbooks free of charge for students to access online under Creative Commons license. And this is their college success textbook. So now it's a full textbook that goes into study skills and time management and all those types of things. And now we can make that freely available for the students to access right in this online environment. Sorry? Flat World Knowledge. They have major textbooks or textbooks in all the major disciplines at this point. And if you're not familiar with them, I'll tell you, it's a great resource to go look at. Every faculty member I introduced it to at least two times comes back to my office to say, wait, I didn't understand this. The textbooks are free, and I can actually modify and change them. So it's a totally new model, but one that I think is going to quickly catch on as vastly superior to what we have today. All right, so quick little demo there. Knowledge behaved. So the second frame that we are kind of focused on in building the OASIS is around the learner to facilitator interactions. And the facilitator could be, that role could be filled by lots of different people at each individual institution. But we see kind of two major components to that role. One is probably going to be fulfilled by kind of a professional academic learning support person. That might be an advisor, might be a faculty member, it may be a staff member in an academic learning center. But they're there to do things like connect the learner. Again, this is an at-risk learner who's been identified as being at risk to not complete a course. So they're going to help connect them to people and services at their institution to get help. Now, it's very likely that this at-risk student could find those resources on their own by going to the institution's website or going into some office and asking for help. But one of the things we're trying to do here, besides actually get them to get help, is to build a feeling of community and engagement with these students. That's a big predictor of them staying in their courses, completing and retaining in their institution. If they feel like someone cares about them, they feel like there's someone looking out for them, they're much more likely to seek help and spend time getting help than if they're just told to go to the website and find somebody to talk with. They're also promoting services and special events like the proofreading service I pointed out. So they'll be there once a week, every other, a couple days during the week, pushing out messages to students saying, hey, midterms are coming up. We're adding some more tutors in the tutoring office during this week to help you get ready for midterms. You might want to go check that out, that kind of thing. And then also moderating discussions. So maybe, okay, what's it like, your first semester or first year in college? A lot of first-generation college students don't have that background. Nobody in their family knows what that's like. So having a discussion with somebody, a professional, can kind of talk to them about that, talk to them the challenges and so forth, we think is going to be very, very useful. Also, motivational speakers, so maybe alumni, someone who graduated, who was struggling as a freshman, maybe contemplating dropping out, stuck with it. Now they've been successful. Having that person do a webinar once a semester, that kind of thing, is also something that's going on within the OASIS. Third design frame, learner mentor interactions. Again, mentor role could be filled by many different people in the institution. Most of our pilots are involving a student in the mentor role, so it's kind of a peer-to-peer mentoring. An upperclassman, again, someone who's kind of been through it, can talk to them about the student experience. So maybe while the professional staff person is talking about your first semester of college, the student mentor is kind of giving you the non-academic side of your first semester in college, which we'll lock up and make very private so people can actually see all that stuff. You guys didn't have a first year freshman experience at college that you didn't want the whole world to know about? All right. So also a student lounge. So an informal place for the students to interact with each other or with the mentor. Maybe someone wants to say, hey, biology midterm's coming up. I'm thinking about getting a study group organized in the library. Anybody else interested? So that kind of informal community building. And we're also experimenting with blogs. We really don't know how much this will catch on, but allowing students to kind of reflect on that first year of learning as a way of them, you know, really kind of through a metacognition kind of process, thinking about what they're learning, thinking about the challenges, thinking what they're overcoming. They might want to keep that very private and not have anybody see it, kind of a diary, or maybe they'll be willing to share it with the online community, which we think is another way of building that community online. So I'll jump back over and show you a quick couple of examples here. So we have a forums environment, asynchronous discussions, where you can see we've set up those types of topics for people to be talking about, interacting on. Blog is part of the OASIS as well. This is fake, but they can come in and talk about, reflect on what they're learning and challenges. We also experimented with things like polls. So we're doing quick polls throughout the semester. Ultimately, we think this is going to be good data to bring into our predictive model as well. So asking students, how supported do you feel? And asking that throughout the semester. That's very valuable data to the support specialist, and they're also very good, valuable data to the predictive model. For the whole course, you said? No, although you absolutely could. And I think ultimately that's where in terms of using for data mining purposes, where we would want it. So in our session yesterday, a couple of people were talking about, polling kind of questions, and I think motivation and how motivated the student is, I think you were talking about too, is a big predictor. We'd like to try to capture that through poll questions.
We have a cognitive science professor and a couple hundred students, and then we have a cognitive science class, and we've made weekly surveying part of the class. And they take each other grade, they fill out a survey every week about these kind of things, find the class and make
change. Yeah, and again, from both the instructor and support person perspective, as well as from the analytics perspective, that's really great data to be using. So we're using the wiki to do things like organize study groups and give people a place to kind of document things and sign up for things and that kind of thing. Questions about the OASIS? I'll talk a little bit about the research. Okay, so in terms of researching the effectiveness of this strategy, at each of our pilot sites, again, we have two community colleges, two historically black college universities, we have a number of courses that are piloting both the predictive analytics, so that we're actually running this analytics every other week with them. We're producing what we're calling academic alert reports. So this is something that goes to the instructor that says the predictive model has identified these students in your course as being at risk to potentially not complete your course. So once they get one of those, they then deploy one of these interventions. And so in each pilot institution, we have between 5 and 8 instructors and courses. Each course has 3 sections to it, taught by the same instructor. One section is acting as a control group. One is deploying what we're calling an awareness intervention. This is basically the student who's been identified as being at risk, and we get the message. They're told, looks like you're struggling in this class. We recommend you do X, Y, and Z. That might be take more practice exams. It might be go see a tutor. That's very similar to what Course Signals does at Purdue. And so what we're trying to do here is compare the OASIS intervention with what they do at Purdue, see if there's any benefit gained from doing having students not just get a message, but then also engage in an online support community. I want to stress this is an exploratory study. We're not going to have huge sample sizes. The intent isn't to have a very rigorous outcome at this stage. We simply want to start to identify some trends and look for where we should spend more time and money and effort doing a larger scale study. By the end of the spring, we'll have our first round of pilots done and our first set of data from the control groups and the two intervention groups. Again, you know, really big questions still out there about what we'll end up finding, but we certainly hope that we'll see an increase in student likelihood of seeking help. Again, if they feel more supported, more involved in the community, they're more likely to seek help. And self-seeking behavior is tied to retention. Same thing with engagement. There's studies that tie how engaged the student feels at their institution with retention rates. Measuring engagement is a hard thing, but we're leveraging, or we've gotten permission to use the NESE survey questions, the National Survey of Student Engagement questions, which is probably the premier set of survey questions that look at student engagement. So we'll hopefully have a good instrument there in terms of surveying students. And we'll also hopefully see an increase in basic skills from the work they do, you know, remediation-wise using the OER materials. Whoops. There. So I'll since we have some more time here, what I'll do is talk a little bit now about the more on the analytic side of the predictive model and some of the research we're doing there. Any other questions on the OASIS? Yeah. Yeah, I didn't include it here, but obviously we're dealing with extremely sensitive data. We're dealing with things that touch on lots of aspects of FERPA. And so we've gone through multiple IRB reviews to get all of this approved. And we have a very rigorous security protocol we're following to remove the identities of students before any of the data leaves an institution and the research begins. And then with the OASIS, for example, it is voluntary. First of all, they got a chance to opt out at the beginning of the whole study. And then we don't put them into the OASIS. We encourage them to join it on their own. And so they can decide not to join the OASIS. It actually is. So every student is in Sakai sites. You can create a site that's called joinable. Then anybody who signs into Sakai can go in, see what sites are joinable, and join that site. And so any student's free to join the site. We are doing a research study, and so we're particularly interested in the students who have been identified at risk to join the site, but it's open to anybody. And the impact of the intervention, of the OASIS. So we're looking at...
Once you cut that in population, you've got to restrict your population. You're only going to measure the effect on selected steps. Is that true?
Yes, and that's what we're interested in doing. We want to see the students who we've predicted of being at risk to not complete the course, does involvement in an online support community make it more likely that they will complete their course? Yeah.
And if you don't predict well, then everything comes out at the other end and nothing
very good. Yes, and that's the next part here is the research we're doing around how well the predictive model works and the portability between one institution and another.
Did they use this data to suggest to the students that they go to
their system? Probably if I checked my email, literally it was like all started last 2 weeks. Anecdotally, I'm hearing that students are following up and you know, setting up appointments with the instructor and signing in that, you know, instructors normally wouldn't see, but who knows. So there's two phases to our kind of research around the predictive analytics and the model and this issue of portability. The first phase, which we've now completed, is to replicate the research that happened at Purdue at Marist College using Marist College data. So John Campbell did his dissertation work in this field. He basically looked at the same exact data sets that we've been looking at Marist College, data coming from the learning management system, how many times students are reading content, submitting assignments, and so forth. He also looked at the student demographic and aptitude data, again, data from students at Purdue. And then through analytics techniques, look for patterns in those big data sets, looking for correlations between what students were doing in the LMS, their prior aptitude, and whether or not they were successful in a course. So our questions have been, if we did the same exact replicate of that research with Marist data, would we find the same correlations as they did at Purdue? So would reading content correlate to student success in a course? And would the strengths of those correlations be similar? And so that's what we did a lot of work on last summer going into the fall semester. Now, Purdue and Marist had some similarities in terms of Pell Grant eligible students and our percentage of minorities and ACT scores. We obviously have some major differences. Marist is a mid-sized liberal arts institution, about 6,000 FDA headcount. Purdue is obviously a large land grant research institution, 40,000 students, which impacts in class size. Purdue tends to have these, especially for freshmen, you know, 300, 400, 500 person lectures. Marist, the largest class size is about 30. So, you know, there's some big differences there. Different technologies. So we were using Sakai, they're using WebCT and Blackboard. So this was kind of our first effort to look at this research question of, if we did the same, replicated the research with these similarities and differences, would we see the same correlation? So probably can't read all these, but just to give you a feel for the data that we're, the specific data we're looking at, this is some of the student aptitude data that we've collected at Marist, course data, learning management system event data, things like viewing content, discussion postings, assignment submissions, and so forth. So in terms of the results, we found very similar correlations at Marist, particularly in the, with the learning management system data that were found at Purdue. So some of the top elements of learning management system event data that Purdue found was correlated to success were reading content, submitting assignments, and visiting the course site. Whoa, that's amazing. You would never guess that on your own, right? But I think the important thing is that it is showing that it's not totally conceivable to build a predictive model using data from one type of institution and have it work at least in, to some degree at another. Which again, going back to this critical question of how do we scale up analytics and bring it across the nation, this is an important research question. We've had similar strengths as well. So in terms of the strength of correlation, how predictive, what's the predictive power of something like reading content? You know, we found similar strength, not totally exactly the same, but similar. And as Purdue found, the LMS event data is not as strongly correlated as the demographic and aptitude data. So you can imagine that a student's GPA from the last three semesters is highly predictive of how well they're doing the course. How many times they sign into that course site, you know, is predictive, but not certainly as strong as the aptitude. Now, where the LMS data becomes particularly important is when you want to predict at the course level in real time. So if you want to be able to say in the first couple of weeks of this course, is a student going to be successful or not, that, then the LMS data becomes particularly important. We had some challenges as Purdue did with missing data. You know, each individual student doesn't click on everything in the course site all the time. And so there's holes in this data set. And how you go about filling in those holes from an analytics perspective is quite challenging. And so we've generally actually just removed all of the missing data rather than trying to fill it in. But that's a challenge that's out there from an analytics research perspective. At Marist and at Purdue, it's really left to the instructor for face-to-face courses, particularly as to what they want to use tool set-wise and how they design the course. Kind of goes back to your question, I think, maybe a little bit of, you know, do we look at this from a learning science and on structural design perspective, or do we just look at it from a mathematical perspective? So from a mathematical perspective, our analytic guy doesn't really care so much what kind of things you do in the learning maps or how you set up your course there. He just cares if you can find a mathematical correlation between what you do in the course and the ranked grade. There's another analytics NGLC grant called Kaleidoscope that I think is partially looking at that. How can we use analytics to improve content and instruction? You know, so we can say, well, this set of instruction and this set of content seems to correlate to student success. This set, not so much. This set is designed this way. Well, maybe we should design all the content or some of the content that way. So it's a good question. We're not specifically looking at that. Sure, I'm sorry, yes. That's probably a typo. It should say aptitude. So the question was, how do we measure student attitudes, which is probably on one of my slides, and I constantly catch myself saying typing attitudes instead of aptitudes. The OASIS?
Yeah, OASIS actually functions better for those students that are predicted by previous grades than those students that are predicted by their elements.
So I think the question is, do students who get identified because of one set of elements, do they get better benefit from OASIS than students who might be identified because of other elements? Okay. So why bother with the LMS data if it's not as predictive of, let's say, GPA? And it's kind of more of a cumulative effect. So the more elements we can add that are predictive, the better the model becomes. And it's also somewhat intelligent in that if an element's not there, well, this instructor doesn't use the assignment tools. We don't have assignment data. It just doesn't use that in the predictive model. So it's in a sense, we might as well add it all there because it only helps. So the first stage of this is really building the predictive model. So we used 3 semesters worth of Sakai event log data to train our model. I forget, it was something like 15 million rows of data that we got. So part of the issue is simply overcome by just having huge amounts of data. And just for the sheer amount of data, we can then start to find these patterns, even though not everybody's using the assignment tool or the lessons tool and things of that nature. Once we actually move to the prediction, then the fewer tools, the less amount of data we have, the less accurate the prediction becomes. I'm sorry, I forgot to repeat the question. Yeah, so the question is, you know, once we start, students start to catch on that we're using predictive analytics, and I shouldn't say it that way because they're fully aware that we're doing this, they could game the system, right? They could start doing things to make the analytics say that they're doing well, maybe even if they weren't. I mean, one part of that is that, well, that's to their disadvantage, so hopefully they would recognize that. The other thing, though, is you've opened up, there's a whole set of policy issues around learner analytics that I think are important for us to be debating and discussing. There's also an issue of, in a sense, profiling. If an instructor begins to see that certain things predict that certain students are not going to be successful in their course, they might leap to conclusions on their own. Oh, there's a minority student in the room, the first generation a college student, I'm going to assume that student's not going to do very well. That could have major negative effects. So there's a whole other policy component to this that we haven't really dug into too much in this grant, which I think are really important. Okay, that's a good question. So the question is, if I get it right, how can we build from the beginning a model and a process that's flexible enough to change as our understanding of the predictors and the data that we need changes over time? And I think it goes beyond just getting started, because I think learning changes, how students learn change. So I think it's going to be an ongoing process of always tweaking the model forever to tune it to be the best model for this population of students this year.
Right.
So the other part of that is bringing more data in. And so the quick answer, and I'll this is one of the things we want to do, but after the grant, we're not funded to do this yet, is to create an application programming interface, an API for Sakai, or take the API that we're developing and make it configurable so that it's much easier to say, well, you know, in this particular academic context, we need this data and this data, and the weights need to be different because we're working with this type of student population. So trying to make the API and the analytic processing of data as configurable as possible is the strategy that we're looking at. In terms of bringing new data in, Pantao actually has a real-time data training process. So theoretically, we're not using it right now, you can have the model get trained as in real time. So we can just be feeding data into the model almost on a daily basis, and the model just gets that much smarter as the data comes in. Okay, I'll hit the last couple of slides here as we wrap up. So the second phase of this has really been trying to enhance the model that we initially built based on what happened at Purdue. And it's great that I'm low on time because I couldn't really explain all the deep analytics work that our researcher has done. But again, we have a paper coming out on this. Use a lot of advanced analytic techniques to try to improve the analytics model. The one I can explain, which I think is maybe most important, is we've moved from an absolute measure of data in courses to a relative data. So for example, if in my course the average number of site visits per week is 100 and Ramon's it's 10, your course is very boring, sorry, a student who has an average number of site visits per week of 9, relative to Ramon's class is doing quite well because the average is 10. In my class, where the average is 100, that's probably not so good. So if we just look at, any student who signs in 5 or more times is doing well, that may or may not be relevant in any one particular course. So we've moved to this relative measure of data rather than initially what we were doing was just looking at absolutes. We've also brought in the gradebook data, which was not part of what Purdue initially did, although Course Signals now also uses gradebook data. And again, not a big shocker there. How a student did on the quiz last week tends to be predictive of how they're doing in the course. Probably impossible for you to see, but this is, at this point, some of the basically the ranking of predictive elements and have their predictive power. So we can see semester GPA is the most powerful predictor at this point. This next score is the gradebook data, so that's pretty predictive as well. We go down, we can see things like assignment submissions, gender and age, all about the same. So again, some elements are more predictive than others, but it's still, it's a holistic thing. So the more elements we can bring in, the better the model is. Semester GPA is the GPA for the semester, the prior semester. The cumulative is for as long as they've been in the institution. Some of the other things we're doing now is looking at data snapshots. So rather than just saying, okay, at the end of the semester, there was 1,000 logins, 1,000 assignment submissions, and looking at just the end of the course and the data at the end, we're looking at intervals within the semester. That's important because you can imagine that right before the midterm, there might be a lot more course activity, and it's important to know when that happens in the course. So we can see the week before the midterm, students who are doing not much at all in the course site, maybe at real risk and not do too well, but the same level of low use in the first week of class may not be mean the same thing. So that's something that's been something that we're looking at. We're obviously running our pilots right now, collecting data from our control groups, and looking at this issue of portability. So we saw similar correlations between the Purdue model and the Marist model. Now we're moving this to very different environments. We're moving it from a liberal arts institution, a private institution, small institution, to community colleges and large state universities or HBCUs. So we may not find the same correlations and the same power of the predictive model there. Alone?
In other words, I guess let's say group efforts, such as green societies or group efforts in student support services where everybody logs on and works on an assignment or so forth. Is that factored into these?
I thought you meant like your mom was doing your work for you, and it was like, oh, your mom's doing quite well in this course. yeah, so the question is, are we taking into account more group effort kinds of things? And not so much, probably. I mean, certainly we assume every individual student's logging in under their account, not somebody else's. Well, I wouldn't say in their jammies in their bedroom by themselves isn't exactly the picture we all know today. But yes, individual use is generally what we assume we're tracking. I think your question, if I get it right, is are we looking at correlations between group effort, how, let's say, a team in a course that's working on a team project, if people in that team do really well, is that predictive of them as a group or individuals doing well in the course? We're not looking at that. I think that's a great research question. It'd be quite interesting to look at, team assignments and what correlations between doing well on a team assignment and doing well in the course overall. It's like the last slide. Let me hit this one and then we can, talk a little bit afterwards. So these are some of the things that we are looking to do next once our lives return to us when we're done with this NGLC grant. So an academic alert dashboard for Sakai is something we see a lot of benefit in. Right now, people are getting basically Excel spreadsheets that have been formatted nicely with these alert reports that identify the students. We'd like a dashboard for that. I mentioned the configurable API already, so a way to adjust the API for Sakai so we can deliver data to our predictive model based on the environment that we're in. We have our researchers are very interested in data mining of new data sets. So extracurricular activities seems to be in the research correlated to student retention and how engaged they are at their institution. Clubs they're in, sports they're involved in, community service they do. at least at Marist, we have that data in a database. So we'd love to mine that and look for correlations there. Electronic portfolios is another data set that we think is very rich for that. Social media as well. We have a new NSF-funded enterprise computing facility at Marist, and we plan, we're moving all of the analytics work we're doing now on other servers to this environment, and it's going to be available to other researchers to tap into. So high computing facilities that people can do, tap into for more modeling work. And we have other partner projects in NGLC that we think there's a lot of kind of synergy between our project and theirs. Open Study is one, Kaleidoscope is another that we've already started to work with. So that's it, and I think we've ended up pretty much right on time. So maybe I'll thank everybody, but I'd be happy to stay after and take more questions or chat with people. Yeah.